Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today is Tuesday, the 27th of January, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're doing well today. It's Terrible Tuesday on the Chief Sports Network. A terrific Tuesday on the morning show, which will get kicked off at 10 a.m. live. Chief Sports app, YouTube, X, podcast up no later than 4 o'clock on our new channels. Inside the Gamecocks. That's where you can get this podcast as well as our live shows in podcast form. Apple, Spotify, it's called Inside the Gamecocks Shows and Podcasts. So check that out, subscribe, rate us 5 stars on Apple, all that good stuff. And by the way, the numbers on that, even though we switched channels, when we left the bigspur.com, they have not decreased. You guys done a great job signing up for the podcast part of it, so thank you so much for that. Preston Thorne is in with Jamie today, JB. Also, Matt Smith, Smitty, will be hosting for an hour, and then it's Terrible Tuesday with Mad Dog and myself on the show. Don't forget Wednesday, we'll have Tailgate Talks in podcast form again on the Chief Sports app as we roll through our programming for this week. Gamecocks are back in action on the hardwood on the men's side. 9 o'clock tip off against Florida on Wednesday. And then the women go to Auburn for a 9 o'clock tip off on Thursday. I've got some things to say about that, specifically about the Florida game and the men coming up on the show. I'm not going to get into too much of that right now. It's baseball season coming up. February 13th is opening day against the Norse of Northern Kentucky. The home of one Darren Horn now, who's the men's basketball coach there. He's actually done pretty well at Northern Kentucky. Got them to the big dance one time, and they're competitive just about every year. So hats off to Coach Horn. I doubt he'll be at the baseball series, but hoping for good weather, and you can expect us to have a combined ITG that day and a load of guests. Jamie's already lining those up. Most likely will be broadcast live from Founders Park. Everybody's kind of, you know, cautiously optimistic about this baseball season. So we will see how everything shakes out there. But it's always football season here on Coffee. That's what we talk each and every day, Monday through Friday. Primarily, sometimes I'll get off on another topic, and that's fine. But football, football, football. And the Gamecocks started winter workouts, it seems, this week. Everybody's there and in class, the team's together. Luke Day had some things to say. Obviously, they released a video, comeback kind of video, and seemed like a very, very honest conversation that he and Shane Beamer both had. But it caught my attention, and this is something we've been kicking around, this topic that Beamer talked about when he was addressing the team in that video, about getting older, experienced guys, and I think he mentioned leadership. And you know, we've talked about leadership a couple of times. I don't get into leadership too much because it, just in general, my philosophy is I never played college football. I don't always know what that looks like when it's not happening. You can see it, obviously, when it's happening. It seemed to me like, you know, and I remember what Steve Spurrier said when he was here, your best players need to be your leaders. You can have guys that don't play a lot that provide leadership, don't get me wrong, but your best players need to be your leaders. And that didn't seem to happen a whole lot last year. And sometimes you get a great player that's not, he doesn't have that vocal leadership. Sometimes you do. I mean, it's a mixed bag. It's psychology. I'm not qualified to go dig into all of it other than surface level to say there's a lot of people that actually played the game like John Strickland that mentioned leadership. A lot of the former players that, you know, looked at this team last year said that. So I'll take their word for it and say, yeah, you need some more leadership. I also think that comes up when you're losing a lot. Leadership. Leadership's not always, to me, and again, I'm not an expert in the specifics, but in general, I believe leadership's not always about when you win. Sometimes it's when you lose. And the team 2 years ago that went on the run after they lost to Alabama, there was leadership, player leadership. You know, they could have a lot of guys there that were just there for 1 year, Rocket, Demetrius Knight, Kyle Kennard, the guys that made a lot of plays down the stretch to help Carolina win. They could have said, oh, well, opt out, get ready for the pros. I don't want to get hurt. We're 1-3 in the league. Same old Carolina. And they didn't. And so that's a tangible example of leadership and culture. And I think that, I'll take people's word for it that it was missing last year. It sure seemed that way. But that was kind of a topic. And so you mix that with what's going on in college football. What does everybody say about Indiana? They're older. I think a lot of that, the people that go over the top with Indiana being older, are the ones that want to justify that it's just this huge outlier and all that. I don't think we know that, folks. I think there's a chance Indiana's just, we're just talking about that one season, that one non-blue blood one and went 16-0 because they had an older team. That's possible. I just don't think we know. And I think there's a lot more to it than that. You just don't win a championship just because you're old. College sports, though, and it's happened in basketball for a while. In basketball, it's proven that when you're older, if you get to the tournament, you have a better chance. Some very talented young teams are upset prone in the NCAA basketball tournament. This isn't basketball, it's football. And there's been a lot of teams that have skewed young that have won the national title. Dare I say, Clemson, Dabo in 16 was talking about how young they were. I was like, oh, come on. They had some older players that obviously were studs, but you go 16, 17, 18, some of those guys on that 16 team were still on the team in 18, crazy enough. And so that in happened, I think. I mean, I'll say this about Alabama. I'll go back to the 08 Crimson Tide. They were 7-6. Kurt Cignetti's talked about it. He was on that staff. And they inherited some good players from Mike Shula that were kind of not used to winning. And, Saban got hired late. They didn't have a super duper recruiting class. There are a few guys here and there within that 08 class with Julio and Dante Hightower and Mark Ingram and all that. They added that. And the next year, they were in the national championship hunt. If it weren't for losing to Florida and Tim Tebow, which they had a great team too, in the Dome. They would have played for all the marbles that year with a relatively young team. And that set the tone, for the championship. And then they lost some players, lost some of Shula's players. In 2010, they were very, very young but talented. That's when they lost the Gamecocks. But then those players set the tone. They won it the next year. So in the previous era, I don't know that being old mattered, but if you look recently, okay. Recently, now let's look at the last of the Big Ten teams that have won it. The last three, Michigan in the four-team format, older team. That Michigan team, a lot of the same players, was not as good as the final one because there are a lot of grown men out there playing. And I think they, had a fortunate draw. I don't know if they'd had to play Georgia. And everybody criticizes SEC people for saying, they lead the country in hypotheticals. So maybe I'll try to stay away from that a little bit. I still think that's a tougher matchup than that Alabama team they played in the Rose Bowl where they had to go to overtime and win. But they won it. So give them credit. Harbaugh had an older team, older team. Then a lot of people left and graduated. And the next year, they weren't so old and they were 8-5. But, Ohio State. 2024, that team screwed around and almost didn't make the playoff and lost to Michigan again. And, a lot of high dollar guys up there. But outside of Jeremiah Smith, who was a stud freshman, just special, Ohio State, man, they were older, an older team. They were a lot younger this year. Very good football team, very talented, but maybe you get the feeling they were a year away. Lost to Miami, didn't really have a tough schedule. Beat that, got a lot of mileage from beating Texas, did beat Michigan. But in 24, they were older. And when they played in the playoff, it showed a lot of grown men out there. Jack Sawyer alone, grown man. And then you have Indiana. So, that's 3 years worth of champions that are older. Now in the SEC, Georgia won it again this year. Georgia's relatively young. They were relatively young. Now, Ole Miss went the furthest in the playoffs, and they had a lot of older players because they're more of a portal team. Texas A&M returns a lot of good players. Now, they had some help, obviously. I'm trying to think of the playoff teams. Oklahoma lost some, but they got a lot back. They made the playoffs. Alabama was an older team, and will have some significant turnover. I'm trying to go through all the playoff teams. Miami was an older team, led by an older quarterback. Got all the way there. Oregon, little young. They got a lot of guys back next year, including Dante Moore, who I don't know. I'm just not a Dante Moore fan. But, so there's some examples of older is better in football now, too. I don't think it's been as pronounced and it's not as over time as basketball, but we may be heading in that way. So that brings me to the portal class for South Carolina this year. This is interesting. Very interesting. So South Carolina this year signed 25 in the portal as of right now. Not maybe they'll add somebody on. I know there's a long snapper that they're looking at, and maybe somebody pops up, but I think they're pretty much done with portal guys. There's a junior college offensive lineman, Adrian Lamb from Georgia Military, that could come in May, originally from Buford, big guy. And I looking at, I think I counted 17 scholarship offensive linemen. 18 is an ideal number. So you get him, that you're looking pretty solid. And he's kind of younger. I think he's in his third year. But check it, check this out. So 25 players were signed. Okay. Of those 25, 17 of them, this is overall, not just by position, 68% are going into either their fourth, fifth, or sixth year. You have one going into his sixth, that's Seth Smith, the tackle from Northern Arizona. You have nine going into their fifth year and seven going into their fourth year. So 17 of the 25. 24 of the 25 are going into their third, fourth, fifth, or sixth year. So another seven going into their third year. That third year, for offensive line particularly, but for a lot of positions, is critical. That's when guys, it's kind of make or break at times, depending on who you have ahead of you and all that good stuff. But that's really, when a player, in some positions maybe is a little slow to develop. At others, like on the line of scrimmage, that's when they're ready to rock and roll, is that third year. Some guys do it in their first, some guys do it in their second, third year, critical. So everybody but one, that's Jabri Coleman, the running back from Penn State that Stan Drayton brought, that was a redshirted as a freshman last year up there. All of them but one are going into at least their third year, and 17 of the 25, fourth, fifth, or sixth. So fourth is a normal senior. So they definitely got older. And will it pay off? I don't know. Will it do, will there be leadership that emerges from this? I don't know. I hope so. I hope some of the players coming back emerge as leaders. You can develop leadership. But I think also leadership too, especially nowadays, maturity matters when it comes to leadership. I mean, we use Demetrius Knight as an example, and Demetrius Knight obviously was an older dude with grown man responsibilities. And yeah, that's like almost another coach as an adult on the field. People lose track of that in college sports now because they want to make everything about everybody getting paid and being pros, but you're still young people. As long as young people are playing the games, there's going to be a need for older leadership. And that's true in sports. Even in the NFL, your veterans lead, your rookies, Nick Emenwore is not out there a leader for the Seahawks, but Ernest Jones is, for example. So there's a, I think in recruiting, by the way, where I arrived at it before we started the portal era and it blew everything up with star ratings and stuff like that, is what does it mean? Does it guarantee success? No. Does it guarantee failure? No. But what it does, it's like gambling odds. It gives you a higher percentage chance. So I would say that the older group coming in give South Carolina football a high and Shane Beamer a higher percentage chance of developing the leadership it needs to maybe handle adversity a little better, to have confidence, to be more resilient in game and in season, because the turnaround never came this past year. There were better performances, there were more competitive performances, but it ended badly. It ended probably worse, one of the worst games they played all year, truth be told. So they, that resilience that came in 24 obviously never came in 2025. There were other issues, bigger issues than that, in my opinion. But, finishing, getting over the hump, guys that have been through it, guys that have played football, that's that just makes your percentages higher of making it through this absolute war that is the SEC. And so I think it's smart. I like it. I think that when you compare it to the last portal class, where they did have some older guys, but of the 18 they signed, eight of them are still on the roster. And then five more left but have eligibility remaining. Could be one more with Rodney Newsome gets a sixth year. So they all transferred out. South Carolina in the last portal class took three guys, Jaylen Brown, Aaron Nolan, and Justin Okoronkwo, who were redshirt fresh for freshmen the year before at their previous school. Justin was at Bama, Aaron was at Ohio State, Jaylen was at Missouri. And so they but all three were in their second year of college football. And so that's what, three out of the 18 in your class. They did sign some older players, don't get me wrong. But there weren't a lot, and so eight of the 18 have eligibility and are back. 13 of the 18 had eligibility to come back regardless. And we talked about that. We talked about how it was a good thing last offseason when, a lot of these guys are more than one and nones. And I'm not saying that that's not good, because of the eight, you have guys like Murphy and Okoronkwo and Brownlow Dindy, Troy Pikes. Those guys are going to play a lot of ball. They're going to play a lot of football for South Carolina this year. A lot of those, a lot of them. So, there's only eight left, but a fair amount. Yeah, a fair amount. So that's a change. And I think sometimes it kind of, I don't know, is there a right way to do it, wrong way to do it? It kind of depends on your needs. Last year you had some veterans and some things like that. I think they missed some leadership. But, last year you had older players and maybe they, if you get a good one that you missed out on recruiting, like was the situation with Jaylen Brown, or a quarterback like Aaron Nolan. Now I know he's moved on and he's at Memphis and all that. Or Justin, who they loved. I mean, Justin and Jaylen, they loved him out of high school. Chance to get him back. Yeah, you take him. Absolutely, you'd have taken him this year. But, there was not, there were, let's just say it skewed younger. And maybe that was what the need was last year. This year, it's definitely older, and it looks like that was a point of emphasis, because this is a lot. I mean, these are, you've got class, you still got a class of, I thought Nick Barrett would be the end of the class of 2021s, which, by the way, for, just for reference's sake, that class had TJ Sanders. It had, Marcellus Dial was in that class. Nick Barrett was in that class. it seems like a long time ago. That was Beamer's first class he put together over Zoom in like 30 days or so. So Seth Smith, come on down, offensive tackle. You're the elder statesman there. But nine guys going into their fifth year. And the COVID stuff is, technically, the oldest guy's 2021 class. The COVID year is out. There's some guys around college football. I think there's a guy with an eighth year somewhere. But the COVID year has dissipated. So this is just traditional old, fifth-year guys. So, and then seven more in their fourth year, which is a traditional senior, like I said. So that's good. We talked yesterday briefly about the starts on the offensive line, the snaps on the offensive line. Now, Dog Stats, who put the tweet out, and look, man, lots of respect for compiling that. Bless that Georgia fan for doing it, because it's awesome stuff. But he had a correction. Virginia actually has like 11,800 snaps. So they're number one. South Carolina's number two with 8,970 total offensive line snaps. And again, on your offensive line, most coaches will tell you they won't experience players. Like, the older, the better, the more experienced, the better. That's why when they talk about offensive line stats. They don't have a lot of statistics. Pancake blocks, I think, are not something that are even official. But and then you have grades, and people don't know what the assignments are and stuff like that. So it's hard to get stats. But one of the stats they do use with offensive linemen is starts. How many starts did you have? You started this many games, that many games, and that's frequent for all your roster positions. But you look at it on the O line because you're not substituting a whole lot there. So if you're part of the starting five, the start usually means a lot of snaps. And so that part of it, that experience part of it for that position specifically does matter. And South Carolina sitting at 17 right now. So over half, or wait a minute, just shy of half, 8 of the 17 are coming in from the portal. And listen to this, from the transfer portal. You've got five guys from the portal coming in, going into their fifth year. You have one guy going into his fourth, one guy going into his sixth, and then one guy going into his third, all from the transfer portal. So that's something else right there. The one guy going into his third is Hank Purvis, coming in from Purdue. He's young. He's a younger guy, has eligibility left. Bube Nabugwu, coming in from Missouri State, fourth year for him. Armando Nevis, fifth year for him from New Mexico State, big offensive tackle. Seth Smith, who I mentioned, 6 year. Hold it down, my man. 2021, hollow. That's good. Dane Arnett, who won a championship at Ferris State, the home of Trinidad Chambliss, Midwestern offensive line, but who I like his versatility, likes to play nasty, he says. He's in his fifth year. Rojo Poku from East Carolina, long journey for him. Walk on to East Carolina, was a soccer, lacrosse player, something like that. 6'6", 330, could play guard or tackle. That's a guy that really, in my conversations with folks from other schools, he's come up a lot. So keep an eye on Rojo Poku, or Emmanuel Poku, but his nickname's Rojo. That's one I'll probably just stick with the nickname on because that's easy to say. Jacarius Peak, the crown jewel of the class, the left tackle from NC State, fifth year guy. So he's older too. So he's got 2 years of college football experience on a guy like Josiah Thompson or Blake Franks who are going into their third. So that's a man. He's an older dude. I mentioned Hank Purvis going into his third. Carter Miller, fifth year guy as well, the center who I'm very high on coming from UCF. So that's an older group right there, as far as the offensive line portal class goes. And so, hey, there's nothing wrong with being second now to Virginia as far as career snaps. And that's good. I mean, look, does it guarantee success? No. What does it mean? It means you're older and experienced and mature on the offensive line. And I think, too, at that position, it's hard to play. I've covered recruiting across the country, South Carolina as well, for years. And I can't tell you how many times you'll get a much ballyhooed offensive line class. And this happened here recently. It happened in the 90s. It's happened before. And the guys you think are going to be your best players aren't because they're highly rated and something happens. Either they get hurt or they just don't have the passion for it, or they get discouraged or they don't develop and then they just quit or they never play and they're just not very good. And then some guys that aren't rated that high, they want it. They bring it every day. They end up being really, really good. This has happened back in the day under Spurrier. It happened a lot with junior college guys. Junior college guys on the offensive line were kind of feast or famine around here. You'd have a highly rated JUCO come in and you just never hear from him. But then, you have a guy like, Rokivious Watkins. So Rokivious Watkins came in with a dude named Stephen Singleton. They both came from Georgia military. Stephen Singleton was a four-star guy. He was at LSU. He's from Buford High School in Georgia. He was a name. Everybody was excited about him. Nobody. Watkins, I think, was just from Atlanta and some guy you'd never heard of. Maybe he signed with somebody out of company. They both ended up at Georgia military. And I still remember that was class of 08 because Rokivious redshirted and then, or 09. Maybe it was 09. He didn't play his first year. That both those guys needed to reshape. Well, Singleton never worked out, but Watkins, who I think was a two-star, because he weighed in at a cool 6'3", 360 when he got in there. He's a big old boy. Boy, man, I mean, where would they have been? Where were a lot of Marcus Lattimore's yards? I remember that Florida game specifically, where Rekevius Watkins was at guard and Pat DeMarco was at fullback. They got in the eye, and Marcus had a hole big enough to drive a truck through, and they won the SEC East that night. So around here, sometimes with JUCOs, it's kind of hit or miss. But the position overall, just around the country, I see it at other schools. It's up, it's down, it's you know, I think it's because it's hard. And you get no love at all. That's an Eminem song. Get no love. Anyway, that's you know, you get no love. If you do your job, nobody talks about you. You know, maybe you'll get, you know, Cole Kublik, who knows what he's looking at on the offensive line. Maybe he'll talk about you. Maybe you'll have a color analyst that talks about you collectively. Maybe they'll zoom in. But most of the time, the attention comes when you don't block. And sometimes it's not even your fault. So that's a hard job in football. And then, not to mention that position, unlike any other, you have to be in sync with four other dudes. And so you could be doing your job, and three of your buddies could too. And then one dude is like messing up completely, and it wrecks the whole thing. It's like a puzzle. Or like Christmas lights, one goes out, they all go out, right? So it's hard. It's hard. So guys, they just, by the time they get to their fourth, fifth, sixth year, they've been dealing with this crap for a long, long time, and they're used to it. And I would think that, again, I'm not a psychologist, that would help them handle assignments, pressure situations, be fundamentally sound, all that good stuff. You know, so I think it's a smart move, the age. You know, watching these guys on film, you know, some of them have surprised me. You know, I mentioned Bubay, the one from Missouri State. I watched his film from Delaware State, not from Missouri State. He played tackle at Missouri State last year, left tackle. But he was a center at Delaware State, and watched him snap and move his feet. And he's athletic. He's got strong, you know. He's a kid from Baltimore, Maryland, which South Carolina needs to continue to get kids from Maryland, D.C., Virginia, you know, and it doesn't matter if you get them out of the portal or not. They still know, they're still buddies with everybody. That's a tight-knit football community for the most part up there. He played at Dunbar in Baltimore, but this guy, you know, he's good, and he kind of was one of the last ones in the boat. You know, he kind of people. Because they signed so many players down the stretch that were kind of like not on the radar. I think maybe sometimes you think about it and you're like, well, those guys are just kind of fillers. But this guy's actually, you know, on film looks good. I like most of them on film quite a bit. But, you know, they wouldn't have had the, if their film didn't check out though, in the portal, you know, they're not coming to South Carolina. So they all have good film. It's just a matter of coming up a level, going, you know, getting fundamentally sound, getting used to the athleticism you faced in the SEC primarily. But you know, that's why I think Pete coming from the ACC, as bad of a football conference as it is, they do have athletes. If you look at the NFL draft numbers over time, the ACC is usually second. You know, so there's good individual players in that league. And South Carolina's done okay with getting guys from, you know, I mentioned Kennard and Knight. They both were at Georgia Tech for a while. Knight obviously came from Charlotte and moved to linebacker at Charlotte. But yeah, man, I mean, it's, you know, so you got to be excited about Peak. The rest of them, I don't know who's going to end up where. I would say Peak, Carter Miller at center, Peak at left tackle. You know, so other than that, just let them battle it out. We'll see who ends up starting, along with the guys that are coming back. And I did want to mention that as well, because you know, South Carolina with 17 offensive linemen now on the roster. Of those, you have five. Oh, wait a minute. Is that five? That's six, actually. You have six, seven of them. Seven of the 17 are in their fifth or sixth year. Okay. Two are in their fourth year. Three are in their third year. One, Damola Ajidahun, is in his second year. Oh, two are in their second year, Cedric Surratt and Damola. And then you have Darius Gray, Zion Giles, and Anthony Baxter, all as true freshmen. So some of these younger guys, your Darius Grays of the world, Cedric Surratt, who I still think will start somewhere, Damola, Zion Giles, the hope is they can be ready to go by 2027. I don't know that Darius Gray won't step in and win a job. I'm not counting anybody out. But and I don't know that Damola will not. I mean, that guy, they're really high on him. And I do think Surratt will start. So some of the returners, Josiah Thompson, people ask about that. He's going into his third year. So it's amazing how much younger Josiah Thompson is than half the room now. And so, I think if Josiah can play right tackle, sometimes, and this is a different coach too. Randy Clements is going to have a different philosophy. Lonnie Teasley would just leave a guy, and I'm not saying I disagree with this because a lot of coaches do it. If a guy's a left tackle, he's a left tackle. He's going to leave him there, and they may move him, slide sides in the off season. Yeah, that's just how they rolled. And so there we go. So Randy Clements may be, given his background, a little more apt to cross train, and Josiah may be the starting right tackle, back up at left, or however they do it. But I think if he can return to form, and I think having a new offensive system and a new offensive co or line coach, that's probably a new and new, more guy, different guys in the room. I think it's a new day for him. So he's also back, and I think that's a pretty solid thing. Blake Franks is back. Markie Anderson's going into his fourth year. If he can get healthy, he certainly can compete. But the jobs now on the offensive line with the guys that are coming back and incoming as freshmen, you're going to have to compete with grown men in most situations. And I think that's what you want on the offensive line. I think John Strickland would say that. And he lived it for 5 years at South Carolina. And I think Preston Thorne would tell you that too. And you can catch him on the morning show later. So that's the thing, this whole, and it's not just O-line. I dug into it a little bit because everybody's going to talk about that position. And I did want to correct the record about the stats that Carolina is second in the country with career snaps on the offensive line coming back in 2026. But, at all the positions, they're older. I mean, defensive tackle, you have Tamiwa coming in from Duragije. I got to learn how to say that, folks. He's in his fifth year. Jordan Thomas from Georgia is in his third. He's a little younger. You got Drew Collins in his third year coming from Arkansas State at edge. Kelby Collins' brother's in his fourth year, all in the SEC for him. Caleb Herring, fourth year, all in the SEC and on the other edge. Even guys like Max Dragg from Chapin, who they got at tight end, started at App State, was at UCF. Fourth year, DJ Black coming back, fifth year there. Jaden Gibson is in his fifth year at receiver. Nitro Tuggle, third year. The kicker, Upton Bellefonte, fifth year guy. There's a lot of older players in this class. You know who's a little young is the running back room. Christian Clark and Sam Dixon are in their third year. And then you have, as I mentioned, Jabri Coleman in his second. Jawaan Howell will be going into his fourth year of college ball. Matt Fuller, his third. So the running backs are kind of the same age. But some age definitely added to the receiver room where after losing Jacobs, I think it's just Nick Harbor who's the elder statesman. Everybody else is in, either incoming as a true freshman or in their second season. I may be missing somebody, but I think that's the case. So adding Gibson and Nitro Tuggle to that room, it got them a little older. And that seems to be, and I think you're going to hear Shane Beamer say that when he talks about the portal class. We got older. I would be surprised if he doesn't say that. All right. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. This has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. I'll see you on the show. Don't forget the morning show starts here in a little bit. Preston Thorne, Matt Smith, lots of good stuff as we roll on towards baseball season and continue to talk football and basketball on the Chief Sports Network. This has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. I'm out. Holla.